When the Food Network launched in 1993, the pastime of binge-watching TV cooking shows didn't exist, and chefs weren't celebrities. Coming up next on Louisiana Eats, we speak with one of the network's first stars, David Rosengarten.
To have a food network where the programming was about food 24 hours a day, a lot of people thought this is never going to work.
Then we speak with the latest Food Network stars, husband and wife chef team, Samantha and Cody Carroll of Cajun Aces.
She was like, "We're looking for husband and wife chefs, and you guys fit the ticket." And I was like, "Are you sure? We're kind of crazy."
We're getting a behind-the-scenes look at food TV on this week's Louisiana Eats. That's coming up next. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A Broward County grand jury has issued a 34-count indictment against alleged Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooter Nicholas Cruz. He's being charged with 17 counts of first-degree murder, 17 counts of attempted murder in connection with the attack 3 weeks ago in Parkland, Florida. The Democratic governor of California, Jerry Brown, is accusing Attorney General Jeff Sessions of lying in his remarks about a lawsuit against California state policies that limit cooperation with federal immigration authorities.
This lawsuit, they're talking about going to the Supreme Court. This lawsuit is going to last a lot longer than the Trump administration.
Brown spoke out shortly after Sessions delivered a speech to a law enforcement group. Sessions denounced several California state laws claiming they block immigration enforcement agents from making deportation arrests. Sessions also singled out elected officials in his remarks. Salvadoran human rights icon Archbishop Oscar Romero will be made a saint of the Roman Catholic Church. NPR's Silvia Poggioli reports Pope Francis says the churchman killed by a right-wing death squad in 1980 became a hero for standing up for the poor and the oppressed.
Romero's path to sainthood was held up during the papacies of John Paul II and Benedict XVI due to opposition from conservative Latin American churchmen. They feared Romero's perceived association with liberation theology would strengthen the movement whose followers fight for social and economic justice. Romero was shot to death by right-wing death squads while he celebrated Mass in a hospital chapel. His death was one of the most shocking in the long conflict between U.S.-backed governments and leftist rebels that claimed thousands of lives. The Pope also announced the canonization of Pope Paul VI, one of the Church's most prominent reformers who brought to completion the trailblazing Second Vatican Council in 1965. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
A powerful winter storm is dropping snow across much of the northeastern United States. NPR's Jeff Brady reports schools, government offices, and businesses have closed as utilities prepare for more outages.
In some communities, power crews are still working to repair downed lines from a nor'easter storm last week. Now, forecasters predict more than a foot of heavy, wet snow in some areas, along with wind, could leave even more customers without electricity. In Philadelphia, snow was light during the morning commute, but officials asked people to stay home as forecasters predicted heavier snowfall throughout the day. Tractor trailers have been banned from some highways during the storm. Many flights are canceled throughout the region, and train service is limited because Amtrak and local public transit agencies are running fewer trains. Jeff Brady, NPR News, Philadelphia.
The Dow is down 242 points, or nearly 1%. This is NPR News. The most prestigious award in architecture goes to one of India's most prominent architects. NPR's Netta Ulabi reports on this year's recipient of the Pritzker Prize.
Balkrishna Dosi is 90 years old. He studied with the giant of modernism, Le Corbusier, who taught Dosi to think of every building as a temple. After learning of his Pritzker win, Dosi told NPR what are most important to his buildings are the people who move through them.
Architecture is a backdrop for life.
Dosi has built more than 100 structures in India, many of them schools and environmentally sensitive low-income housing. He's the first Indian to win architecture's most prestigious prize. Jurors praised not just his buildings, but his commitment to organic urban design. Netta Ulabi, NPR News.
In a bid to attract more low-income consumers, Amazon is offering Prime membership discounts to people on Medicaid. The company says eligible shoppers can apply for a discounted $5.99 per month membership on its website, Amazon.com. It's typically $12.99 a month for those who do not want to pay the annual fee of $99. The move to expand its reach to lower-income clientele is widely seen as a play for Walmart's consumer base. Well, so far, the company's ventures are paying off big time, to the tune of over $100 billion for CEO Jeff Bezos. He is the first person to top that staggering figure in Forbes magazine's annual ranking of the world's wealthiest moguls. U.S. stocks lower this hour. The Dow's off 239 points at 24,644. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Library of Congress, with the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, a program that offers thousands of books for all ages in audio and braille formats. More at loc.gov/NLSread.
Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. In September of 1993, a new cable network hit the airwaves that changed America's relationship with food forever. The Food Network. On this week's show, we're taking a long look at both the history as well as the current state of Food Network. First, we'll hear all about those early days from food TV pioneer David Rosengarten, who was the network's first big star. Then, the network's newest stars, Louisiana-born and bred husband and wife chef team, Samantha and Cody Carroll of Hot Tails and Sac-O-Lay, fill us in on how they managed to keep their authentic identities intact while undergoing the Food Network makeover. And Kai Hecht, one of Food TV's youngest stars, gives us the lowdown on how he won Chopped Junior. What's that sound? We've got the TV on this week's Louisiana Eats.
I'm David Rosengarten. I'm a food writer, wine writer, TV chef, cookbook author, most important, eater.
After being discovered many years ago when the Food Network was in its infancy, David Rosengarten has enjoyed a remarkable career enlightening America about food. We sat down with David to hear the story of how he became the Food Network's first TV star, the path he's taken since then, and what he envisions for the future of food. David, you were there in the very, very infancy of what is now the big, huge monster we all know as the Food Network. From 1994 until 2004, my goodness, what a run. You appeared and hosted, did something or another in over 2,500 shows. So tell me about what it was like back in the day and how that came to be for you.
You know, you have to remember that when we started the Food Network, and I did the first show, as I think you said, we had no idea that this was even going to survive, that it was going to be a success. People didn't even know if people were going to tune in and watch stuff about food on television. Of course, there were always a few successful TV shows like Julia Child and, you know, that kind of stuff.
But that was PBS. That was different.
That was PBS, and it was sort of random. You know, you might see one every once in a while. To have a Food Network where the programming was about food 24 hours a day, a lot of people thought, this is never going to work. This is never going to happen.
This is the TV Food Network.
The TV Food Network is serving up something for everyone.
We all felt like we were doing sort of like the high school TV club or something like that. We started in very way down there on the economic scale premises. You know, we were in like a lousy little place on way on the west side of Manhattan. And then it caught on pretty quickly and it grew pretty fast. And, you know, within a year, we were in a really nice studio. And all of a sudden we all thought, whoa, maybe people are going to actually watch this.
On Food News and Views, award-winning journalist Donna Hanover and food and wine expert David Rosengarten update you on all the news that's fit to eat.
And how did you come to be there at that time?
Oh, I have such a weird showbiz kind of story. I had an agent who was sort of hammering me all the time to talk to this guy, this Charlie Pinsky guy, who's a TV producer, because you could be good on TV. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't want to bother this guy. Finally called him on a Sunday. He said to me, well, sorry, I'm going to France tomorrow to shoot a TV show. I'll be gone for months. Wait, where do you live? I told him. He said, you know what? I'm going to take a break. Packing, I'll come by. Comes to my apartment. We talk. I show him a tape of a pilot I did. He goes, you know, before I go to France tomorrow, he said, I'm having a meeting with a guy named Reese Schoenfeld. Do you know him? I said, no. He's starting this thing called the Food Network. Do you know about that? No. Do you mind if I mention your name? I said, no, I don't mind. Day later, I get a call. Are you the David Rosengarten who saw Charlie Pinsky last night? Yes. Would you drop your tape off by our studio? Yes. Next day. Would you meet at West 57th Street? I did. And all of a sudden, I'm in a studio, and I'm talking to the woman who became my co-host, and for 3 minutes we're talking about, well, what did you have for lunch? I had a tuna salad sandwich, you know. And 3 minutes later, this man comes out of the shadows and walks over, shakes Donna Hanover's hand, and says, well, we found our co-host. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And that he never came over to me. He called my agent, and that was it. Then I had a job.
That's tonight's edition of Food News and Views. I'm Donna Hanover.
And I'm David Rosengarten. Be sure to join us each weekday evening right here on Television Food Network.
This man I just mentioned, Reese Schoenfeld, he had started CNN with Ted Turner. So his specialty was starting networks, cable networks. But he was not a foodie. He didn't know much about food. And at CNN, they had a kind of centerpiece news program. He figured out, it's the Food Network, I know, but we need a centerpiece news program, just like we did at CNN. So that was that first show, which was called Food News and Views. And Reese would come into our dressing room every night and say things like, I think we got our story. It's bovine growth hormone, or, you know, whatever. It's the credit card wars in restaurants. And Donna and I would look at each other like, nobody cares about this. So he was really trying to make a CNN-style impact, which did not work. Ironically, if you started a network today and it was all about that kind of, you know, parallel stuff about food, it would work. This is the time. He was ahead of his time.
Now, tomorrow on Food News and Views, we will hear a commentary from Julia Child, and Florence Fabrikan of the New York Times will deliver the best produce buy of the week.
You were doing this live?
Yes, that show was live for many years. Later, we did it live to tape, but we did do it live without too many goofs. You know, it went pretty well. The greatest goof I ever remember, not on the Food Network, but on Home Shopping Network, I had a new book out, and I remember the host was Sissy Biggers, who had appeared a lot on the Food Network, and they've got my book, which I think was Dean and DeLuca cookbook, on the stovetop, and it's electric, and nobody knew it was on, and it caught fire. And it's live, of course, on Home Shopping Network, and Sissy picks up my book, which is burning, and she holds it up to the camera, and she goes, see how hot this book is?
Oh, that is wonderful. Yeah. So then how do you make this transition from food news into... Then you begin to do the stand and stir.
Right. At the time we started, the second show, the third show, the fourth show was all that. Various personalities who have now slipped into the mists of history. But I walked into Reese's office just a couple of weeks into it. I said, hey, Reese. Hey, Mr. Schoenfeld. I have an idea for a show. Yeah, what is it? Well, in every show, I would take one food or one dish and I would just do 30 minutes on it. I would tell the history of it. I would discuss the aesthetics of it. I'd cook it. I'd sit down and eat it with the proper thing to drink and so on and so forth. Reese looks up at me and he goes, okay, when do you want to start? Now, today you have to go through like 64,000 people and committees before you get somewhere. Literally, the man said to me, okay, when do you want to start? And we started about a month later.
And I know you're out there. To cook or not to cook oysters? That is the question.
It must have been really exhilarating.
It was exhilarating. It was exhilarating. Technically, the hard part is, you know, people who don't do TV maybe don't realize this, but I've just done 3 TV spots in New Orleans in the last 2 days. TV's hard because it's the only job that you could ever go to. Maybe modeling would be something like that, but where you need to look like it's the best day of your life and you're totally fresh. So at the Food Network, in the weeks that we were shooting Taste, my cooking show, I would shoot 25 shows in 5 days. Waking up at 5 in the morning, shoot all day, clear the studio for Food News and Views. Then I'd have to get my blow dry, come in as anchorman, and look like, hey, it's David Rosengarten, it's Food News and Views. You know, meanwhile, I've just done 25 cooking shows. I'm exhausted. But anyway, I'm not complaining. It was great.
You must have been a very young man at that time
I was a
to
very
have that
young man.
Sort of stamina.
Yeah.
Because it sounds exhausting just to do it.
Yeah, but exhilarating too. Because, you know, like when you're in a TV studio and it's usually cool in the studio, temperature-wise, and it's dark, and then those lights go on, and it's a rush, you know, it's adrenaline. And I was so scared at first, I didn't realize that that would be the case. And now I'm never scared because I know my adrenaline is going to take over. But somebody was co-hosting with me way back then, a guy from New York who's known in New York. His name is Bill Boggs. He's done a lot of TV in New York. So he was brought in one night to substitute for Donna. And it was one of my first nights, and we're in the dressing room, and I go, Bill, I'm so scared. He said, what are you scared about? I said, I'm going on TV. And he went, man, what's your problem? It's just TV. And that's the professional's attitude. It's just TV. You know, for a normal person like myself, it was like, I'm going to screw up. I'm going to say something wrong. I'm going to look like an idiot. And Bill's like, even if that happens, it's just TV.
A Mid-American treat. And with it, I'm going to drink a good Mid-American beer. And I'm going to be halfway to heaven. This is food. Remember, life is a matter of taste. Bye-bye.
When did you begin to realize, walking down the street in Manhattan, that perhaps your life had acquired a life of its own? Tell me how that went in the early days.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that this story is segmented into regions. We had our strongest viewership in the early days in New Jersey, I think in Texas, and in Los Angeles, Southern California. So I'd be in Chicago or even San Francisco. Nobody, you know, I was just John Q, nobody. Then I'd go to L.A., people would be, I'd be in a taxi and they'd be rolling down their windows going, love your show. You know, so when I went into those saturated markets, I could feel the difference right away. And later it spread to everywhere. So, you know, I mean, still to this day, and I probably did my last show at least, 13, 14 years ago, something like that. But to this day, I get stopped practically every day with people saying, I love your show. This is kind of cool.
When we come back from a short break, our conversation with David Rosengarten continues. Stay tuned.
Dirty Rice, satisfying your Louisiana music RV since 1991. Join either me, Bill Bolins, or Mr. Lee Kleinpeter for the best in Louisiana music. Cajun, Zydeco, blues, swamp pop, you name it, we got a whole lot of rock and roll, too. That's Dirty Rice, every Saturday night at 8:30 to 10 p.m. right here on KRBS 88.7 FM and on the internet at krbs.org.
Later today on This American Life, 5 women.
I'm 8, and I felt like I was going to die if I never met him.
They had, named someone, the hypnotizer. They were like, oh, the hypnotizer. But eventually I found out it was me.
Like, I'm 12, and you're an adult talking about, my body and, boys, and it's so uncomfortable.
We hear the personal histories of 5 women and how those histories affected them when they all came into contact with the same man.
Tonight at 7 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Dan Phillips inviting you to Funkify Your Life Thursday afternoons at 1 and Friday nights at 9 right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets, from Camellia Brand, Beans Done Right, a New Orleans tradition since 1923, and also from Cafe B, featuring contemporary Creole cuisine with an emphasis on fresh Gulf seafood, served in a classic Old Metairie setting. Lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, and private events on Metairie Road. Are you podcasting Louisiana Eats yet? If not, it's time to subscribe. We've launched a new podcast series, Louisiana Eats Quick Bites. Quick Bites combine previously unaired interviews with lots of info and recipes, too. You don't want to miss this, so subscribe today on our podcast page at poppytooker.com. That way, you won't miss a single serving of our broadcast or our new Quick Bites podcast. And now, back to Louisiana Eats. We've been talking with Food Network pioneer David Rosengarten. What inspires you? What's driving you today?
Funny. I'm going to pull together a couple of opposing ideas here. But what always inspired me was the fact that, I don't know, I was just lucky in terms of food. I grew up in a food-crazy family way before people were food-crazy. I always refer to my dad as the ur-foodie, the very original first foodie.
Where were you growing up?
I was born in Brooklyn, way before it was cool. And then we moved to Rockaway, Queens when I was 5. So that's really where I grew up, on the beach in Rockaway. But you know, my friends, you know, generally very, you know, nice, educated group of people. They knew nothing about food. They didn't realize that in 20 years they'd be food fanatics. They weren't yet. So since I had all this background and I had taught myself a lot about food, I was the person who sort of told other people about food. I had this group of friends. Every Saturday night I would cook a dinner party. And on Tuesday they'd say, "So Dave, what are you making this Saturday night?" I'd say, "I think this Saturday night I'm going to make moussaka." And they would go, "What is that?" You know, like today, everybody knows what that is. But then people did not know. It put me, and I'm sure some others, in a unique position. And I was inspired by that. I want to tell people. I know all these great foods of the world. I want to tell people about it. It's changed because now everybody sort of knows everything. But I hope this doesn't sound sour in any way. But you know how it is when everybody gets to know everything? Sometimes they don't always get it right. So the motivation has changed in a way. It's kind of like, I don't have to tell you about moussaka now, but I may need to correct your technique.
Your pronunciation, lots of things that we could count.
I've been teaching cooking classes recently with the ICE in New York, Institute of Culinary Education. I love knowing all the foods of the world, all over the place. I have no specialty. What's your specialty, Dave? I don't know. Good food. Yeah, I enjoy doing that. I'm doing something else these days. There's a new company called Flavored Nation, and it's a bunch of people who used to work at the Food Network and do live events at the Food Network. And what they're doing is they're identifying the iconic dish in every one of the 50 states. And I'm the identifier. I'm on the phones every day with every state working on this. And we're not done identifying yet. But when we are, we're going to find a chef in every state, one chef, whom we're going to fly to St. Louis in late October, and we're going to have a big Flavored Nation weekend where you can walk through the thing in the dome in St. Louis and taste the 50 iconic dishes of the U.S. under one roof. We have already decided on Louisiana. Now, Louisiana was one of the hardest of the states because it's so rich.
We have too many choices.
Too many choices.
Well, I'm just on the edge of my seat. I can't wait to hear what you pick.
Well, I'm going to prolong the suspense. We imagine a state like South Dakota. What do you do with that?
I have no idea.
And I found out that there is a state dish in South Dakota. It's called Chislic. And everybody eats it in homes and restaurants. And it's basically cubes of meat. And it's usually lamb or beef, but it can be venison, that are seasoned lightly, deep fried, put on a plate with saltine crackers.
Oh, that's crazy.
I know. That's South Dakota. Okay, Louisiana, where we had at least 10 good choices for the dish. You want to guess or should I just tell you?
I would guess gumbo.
You got it. Bingo.
Oh, I'm right so on. Relieved.
Right
I'm
on.
So relieved.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It's gumbo. And we have a very special person coming to St. Louis to cook some gumbo for us, and that would be Mr. Dickie Brennan Jr.
Dickie himself?
Dickie himself.
You know, that's so interesting because people forget that Dickie was a chef before he was a restaurateur.
Right. Right. I was interviewing Dickie recently by phone because I was writing a story about him, and he told me a lot about his chefing days at Commander's, and, you know, he's working in the kitchen with Paul Prudhomme, you know, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, when he was in high school.
Yeah.
Dickie was in high school. Yeah.
And he told me that Paul Prudhomme walked over to him one day and whispered in his ear. He said, you know, everybody in this kitchen is watching you. And he goes like, what did I do? He said, no, you're the owner's son. Everybody's watching you. You just keep that in mind. And he said it was a great inspiration for him.
I would be remiss to end this conversation without asking you to please give me your state of food TV today. Now, it's so huge. We're talking way beyond, of course, the one food network
right. That
where it all began, but everything has gone in such bizarre directions in many ways, to me, it seems.
You probably know, Poppy, I have a background in theater as well. So that's probably what helped me more than anything else when I walked into this virgin territory of food TV in 1994. I still apply the same standards that I always applied to any type of performance, theater, film, food TV. I like people to be authentic. And I find I'm a little concerned by the copycat stuff that's on TV, all the TV shows, beauty contests and reality shows. And you know, I mean, I understand it. It's, you know, not many people realize, but it's much cheaper to produce one of those than to write a script. So there are all kinds of reasons for it. But I don't like it when people really are just playing the form. I know that here's the moment where the guy presents the rose. And it just all seems so, you know, lifeless. But oddly enough, when people have a reality to them and a spark to them, not to say that they can't lose it, but I'm going to tell you somebody, for example, on the Food Network that I still enjoy watching. Guy Fieri. Like that guy. Somebody might say, well, that's, you know, like dumbing down or whatever. However, when I watch him, I think he's into this. He enjoys this food. I like the kind of food he goes to. So you can do the format, the modern formats and stuff like that. Just be real. That's what I like. I hope we get back to more reality. I don't mean reality TV. I mean reality.
Well, this is such an amazing honor to have this chance to sit and chat with the great David Rosengarten. Thank
so nice
you
to talk
so
to you.
Much.
Thank you.
Food personality, author, and chef, David Rosengarten. Husband and wife team, chefs Samantha and Cody Carroll, own and operate two Louisiana restaurants, Hot Tails in New Roads and Sacolet in New Orleans.
this award-winning culinary couple are already popular figures in the local food scene, but they're Food Network stars too. In their new series, Cajun Aces, Samantha and Cody give audiences a peek into their lives as restaurant owners, husband and wife, and of course, chefs.
Boudin Benedict.
The hollandaise base starts with eggs and lots of butter.
I'm gonna go ahead and add our Creole mustard here.
This is gonna make it really tangy.
For the record, Samantha, Cody, and I have been friends for a long time, so when I turned on the TV and saw the two of them in Cajun Aces, I couldn't get over how well their personalities were captured on screen. When we spoke in the Louisiana Eats studio, I asked them how they managed to be so authentically themselves on the show.
That's the only option we gave them.
That's a good answer. That and a little bit of beer.
Yeah.
Beer helps.
They let us drink a little beer while we cooked because we said it was natural.
Well,
so.
At first, Poppy, I mean, the first day we filmed, it was awkward. I mean, really, we've done like small TV things. We've done the news and
new
stuff.
Segments
and the
more
we've done it,
shows.
The more used to, you know, we kind of got used to it. But this was different. It was a bunch of strangers coming into our house, into our restaurants, and it was weird at first. Just the first day. Second day, it got a little better. And by the third day, we were all good.
How did it come about in the first place?
We got a Facebook message to the Hot Tails business page. And it was this girl. Her name was Bridget. And she said, are you really husband and wife chefs? And we were actually on our way to Mobile, Alabama to cook crawfish for a catering job. It was like 1,500 pounds or something we had to cook in Mobile. And so he was driving. I was holding the phone. I was like, I'll just answer it and see what it's about. And then it just led to that. She was like, we're looking for husband and wife chefs. She's like, and you guys fit the ticket. And I was like, are you sure? We're kind of crazy. But yeah. It worked out. And then they sent us a video camera and we documented our lives for about 2 weeks.
We're actually traveling to Napa.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, we went cook at the Worlds of Flavor and it was that week. And they were like, well, you have to film this week. I was like, all right, we'll bring it to Napa with
us. Yeah. After that, they send a small crew. I think it was like a skeleton crew is what they call it. So it was like 3 or 4 people, sound, camera, and then a producer or director. And they filmed a sizzle. Is that what it's called, Cody?
I'm sizzle. Sure.
Yeah, sizzle. I'm like, I'm still new to this. And from there, they submitted that to Food Network, and they got a response in under 24 hours. And we were one of their fastest to be greenlit productions.
Yeah.
So it was pretty exciting.
I mean, it presented to all the networks, and Food Network picked it up.
Wow.
Like super fast. Food Network's never been, besides like Emerald, it's not had a lot of Cajun stuff on it or Louisiana for that matter. First thing I said, look, we're going to Food Network. It's going to have to be something different. So we knew it was going to be a challenge going in.
Well, they must have been so thrilled to meet you guys. It's not just that you guys are husband and wife and that you tell the story of the country and the city
yeah.
in your restaurants. But my goodness, you have a farm?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they must have just said, we found the mother load.
They really kind of, yeah, they kept asking us, is this for real? Do y'all really do this? Do y'all do this? We're like, yeah. Like,
mm-hmm.
We're going hunting tomorrow. We're going to do this tomorrow. I mean, we go back and forth and we do everything. So,
what was the reaction to your employees? Were they a little concerned about the intrusion of the cameras?
Not necessarily. They were more worried about their customers and they didn't want people to like be in their face and make them feel uncomfortable. But the production company was very respectful and they kind of let the servers steer the show. And whenever we were open for business, because I mean, the cool thing about it is when we're filming, people are eating and they're happy. So they're talking about happy things. So it's not like it's upsetting our customers or anything like that. But they got used to it. At first, I really didn't know how they were going to react to it because I felt like they wouldn't understand it until they were in it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to try to get everybody to be themselves at the same time, which is not easy to do.
Not in front of a camera.
You know, you have some people freeze up and some don't. And
I can't work that day.
To get everybody to act natural is kind of hard.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it takes repetitions. It really does.
Tell me how it was that first day. Talking to each other, reacting with each other. I mean, did y'all like give each other a little check once in a while about, hey?
Well, the first day was the sizzle, was the skeleton crew. And they told us to meet at Old River Landing, which we did because they wanted to get footage of us fishing and just how we react with one another while we're fishing and what we talk about. And these minivans roll up and these people come over and they shake our hands and then they mic us up and then we're out. And it's just like, okay, we just got this random boat and Cody's brother's driving the other boat because they don't know how to drive a boat. Little brother's driving the other boat. And then after it was over, after we filmed that little scene, they're like, okay, well, what would y'all do now? And I was like, honestly, we'd go through that drive-thru daiquiri and go get a Jell-O shot. So we go through the drive-thru daiquiri store right by Cody's house.
Backwards,
because he passed it up. He's like, man, I'm really going to put on a show for these people. And so we pull up and it's his best friend's from high school's mom works there. And she's like, Cody, we just got these Jell-O shots. You want to try them out? I just made them. I want you to try them. No idea. There was like GoPros all in our car and like microphones everywhere.
It was so fun.
Oh, God.
She was taking shots with us. So we're trying to drive.
So that was our first experience. We loosened up pretty quickly.
Yeah. Oh. We took them gar fishing that night. The camera crew. And the mosquitoes were so thick, you couldn't even see the water.
Oh.
I was like, these people are never going to come back to Louisiana. It was so bad.
It was awesome, though. Yeah.
Did you ever have any food failures?
Did we?
No, not really. You just got to kind of not care. You just got to have fun.
Yeah.
You got to have fun cooking. And you get to the point where you're not worried about – because, I mean, as a chef, and we're very serious chefs, you know that. And – it's you worry about what people think if the dish is too cheesy, like not cheesy, not literally cheesy.
Yeah.
But really, you kind of worry about that stuff. And then you get to the point where you're just like, let's have fun and cook. I mean, if it's good, it's good. And we challenge ourselves. We never practice any of the dishes, even though we've cooked them different styles before, but even the newer dishes, we never practiced them. We just did them.
Yeah.
On screen, that was the first time we did them. If we messed up, we messed up. It was whatever.
Y'all are just great cooks. You're great chefs. Did you all ever disagree? Was there any friction between the two of you during the shooting?
I mean, it's just you, Poppy. It's like another restaurant. You know, I'm a perfectionist. She is as well. So it's like little details. Even when we're cooking, what we're saying. I mean, It's detail oriented. I mean, it's.
Yeah, that's true.
It's. I don't know.
We wouldn't really.
You know, if you do something wrong, you're like, look, we got to fix that. We got to do this right. Let's do this. So behind the scenes, yeah, we had fun, but it's some things where let's get this right.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you're on a time slot. You're really on a schedule, just like in a restaurant. It's like, let's get this done. You got to keep redoing it.
Yeah.
The editing is another whole horror sometimes. Yeah. How's the editing going? Because sometimes I've done some things and I've thought afterwards, oh, thank God they edited me and made me so nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, a couple of the things that we said, like one of the jokes in the show, and this was just whenever it was like at the end of filming and we were completely Jell-O-brained and just trying to say things and like get across our point, you know, so we can kind of be done with it. And I made the comment about Ian, our chef, saying he doesn't like pecans. And then Cody was saying how, oh, he should just move to Arkansas. And I said, oh, or worse, Alabama. And I'm thinking they're not going to use that. And I'm just saying that because I'm a Tiger fan. Like,
there's plenty of stuff we said that day.
But they used it. And I was like, well, I mean, at least I'm still a Tiger fan. You know? Hopefully nobody took offense by it because it was just a little football joke. But
so how did that process go? Did y'all just come to him and say, look, here's what we want to do? How many episodes?
Four.
It was four. They buy until the end of the year. So actually, we'd have to get another season bought or a different concept. We don't know anything yet.
We're hearing great things.
Are y'all surprised by people recognizing you? How has this changed your life?
I mean, people notice us and recognize us. You know, in certain places now, I won't say everywhere we go, but in little places here and there, people come up and ask, are you guys the Cajun Aces? But
the first time was at the DMV.
Yeah,
seriously.
The first time was at the DMV. Yes. Yeah. So
it was awesome.
But all that Cody and I just really focus on is just being ourselves. Like, don't, I've met people that are chefs who have completely, I like was completely invested in and totally looked up to them. And just the way that they talk to me has just like totally crushed every ounce of respect that I ever had for them. So,
and then there's the opposite.
There's, and then there's the like opposite.
So super cool.
There's the people like Rick Bayless, like he made Emerald's my life.
Cool. And even Michael Simon, met
Michael
him at the
Simon,
airport.
Michael like, Simon, like coolest guy ever. And I just hope that even we're not of that celebrity status whatsoever, but I just hope that when somebody meets us, they can say those things about us. So that's just my personal goal.
They will, because they're, they know you guys and the yeah. real you, because that's y'all on TV.
Yeah.
It's really, I was so happy to see that you didn't change. It's really yeah. you.
It's weird to look at yourself. It's like, I really talk like that and act like that? All right. That was kind of lame.
Yeah.
So what do you hope comes next?
I don't know. We got so much going on with the restaurant
cooking.
And yeah, just cooking.
We've been so busy this week.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad y'all took the time. Please come back and talk to us again on Louisiana Eats.
We will. We love it here. We love you, Poppy.
Samantha and Cody Carroll, culinary power couple and stars of the new Food Network series, Cajun Aces. Two Food Network stars had pretty serious political ties? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back.
I'm Cecil Doyle. Since the latter part of the 1980s, Earthbeat has been spotlighting sounds from around the world, from field recordings to classic vinyl to some of the latest smashes on the international scene. Join us for Earthbeat, Sundays 7 to 8 p.m., Thursdays 10 to 11 p.m., right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
The San Antonio Sound is known for great Tejano accordionists like our guest Flaco Jimenez. Also Brown-Eyed Soul from Sonny and the Sunliners, remembering roots rocker Doug Somm, and Los Tex Maniacs' new take on tradition. Plus Freddie Fender, the Texas Playboys, and Sam the Sham. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for San Antonio Sounds on American Roots from PRX.
Coming up Friday afternoon at 1, right after the Blues Box, here on KRVS.
Hello, everyone. This is Sadie, letting y'all know that my new show, Off the Tracks, airs on Thursdays at 10 p.m. on 88.7 FM or online at krvs.org. And if you missed the show, just go to krvs.org to listen to it on demand.
Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blended beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. Which two Food Network stars had pretty serious political ties? Donna Hanover joined David Rosengarten and, of all people, rich and famous celebrity Robin Leach on that first broadcast in September 1993. At the time, Donna was busy campaigning for soon-to-be New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani and Donna had met in Miami in the early 80s when he was still married to his first wife. They moved in together in 1982, were married in 1984, and later divorced in 2002 when Giuliani's term as mayor ended due to a very public affair Giuliani had with Judith Nathan, who became his third wife. Sandra Lee, of Food Network's Semi-Homemade fame, has lived with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo for over a decade. Despite the marriage rumors, they remain unwed as Andrew begins his run for a third term as governor. Isn't celebrity gossip delicious sometimes? I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. After a competitive food TV show like Iron Chef or Chopped wraps production, contestants will often throw a viewing party in their own restaurants. But what if the contestant is only 10 years old? When Kai Hecht made his food TV debut on Chopped Junior, he hosted a screening on Tulane's campus at Hillel's Kitchen with hundreds of friends and family in attendance.
Congratulations to Kai for all of his hard work. Guys, ready? Let's do this!
Four kid cooks shoot the breeze with celebrity judge Allison Williams on this Chopped Junior.
To get an understanding of how the 10-year-old Kai came to be a contestant on the program, we invited him and his father, Michael Hecht, to join us in the Louisiana Eats studio.
I'm Michael Hecht, and I'm the proud father of Kai Fries Hecht.
My name is Kai Fries Hecht. I go to Lusher Charter School, and I'm 10 years old.
Well, and you're also a TV champion, a TV cooking champion, and right here in our midst in New Orleans. I am really impressed. So, how did this process work, Michael? How in the world did Kai become involved on competition television?
Well, it started as a bit of a lark. I think that Kai had mentioned that he would like to be on Chopped Junior, and my wife, Marlena, to her credit, said, well, what's the worst that can happen? So she sent in an application, and then we ended up doing an audition video at my wife's ancestral house in a little city called Streep, where the biggest city next to it's called Milfart, in the middle of Denmark. Kai's mother is Danish, and so Kai is Danish-American, so we go every summer. And we did it in my wife's grandmother's kitchen. And from there, it was just many, many interviews, many, many legal documents, and it finally ended up in Chelsea Studios in New York City.
So once we get the notification that I made it on Chopped, it's dead secret. I can't say anything. We signed a contract and everything.
Was it hard?
It was hard but easy at the same time making it on. It was a long process with a lot of Skype interviews, phone calls, and eventually leading up to one video of me cooking my signature dish.
What is your signature dish?
So, I really have about two signature dishes. One of them would be this fish taco that I made with a bright mango salsa on it. The other one would be this Danish dish called stjerneskud. It's a lot of components. It's basically a pan-fried piece of fish with asparagus, black caviar, butter, lettuce, leaf. And then there's sauce, which is a base of mayo, creme fraiche, paprika, tomato paste, and it's really good.
Yum. Where in the world did you learn to make that? That can't be something you're having in your grandmother's kitchen.
I learned this in Denmark at a local fish store that they have. And they gave us a strand of school. I tried it, and I knew I wanted to make this when I got home.
Well, it must have been an extra bit of excitement then for you to have Marcus Samuelson be one of the judges. I hear you all speak the same language, literally.
Yeah, I speak Danish. He speaks Swedish, so we have a little bit connection that way.
Snacking and dance?
Yeah.
Yeah? You're next to Sverige.
Hi. Oh, yeah.
In Göteborg?
Yeah, yeah, next to Sverige.
That's so impressive.
It's very sort of around nature, and you definitely capture that.
A lot of my plating draws inspiration from nature, the outside, just like they do in Denmark, Norway, Sweden.
Kai, tell me about your fellow competitors.
So there's a girl named Emerson that's from New Jersey, another girl named Bria that's from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and a boy named Chris that's from Arizona, Gilbert, I believe. Well, we meet at the Hilton Inn right before the competition, and when we go in the bus to get down to Chelsea Market, we just get to interact with each other, get to know each other, so then we have a lot more fun in the competition itself.
Kids, that clock is not stopping. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4.
If you really get to know someone, it makes it even harder to compete against them, doesn't it?
I think it does, but after the first 5-7 minutes of competing, you sort of forget everything. You forget the cameras, the lights, anybody around you. You just get into your comfort zone and start cooking. And I think that's what needs to happen to produce a great plate of food.
Well, you did it. You certainly did it.
All right, let's taste some appetizers. You're up first, Kai. What'd you make?
So what I made for you is chorizo and deep fried chorizo with sauteed broccoli.
And Michael, were you there watching? Do they take the kids away from you? How does that work?
Well, it was torture on two levels. They go and they take all the parents and they sequester us in a separate room, and you have to stay there all day and even be escorted to the restroom. So it's physical torture, but it's mostly kind of emotional torture because we're all watching our children as they are taping the show or watching on a monitor. And so, you know, it's just excruciating to see your child there and to see the clock ticking away. The kids were cool. The parents, for us, it was a disaster. You know, one of the parents was a smoker and kept wanting to go out for a cigarette break because they were so nervous, but they had to be escorted out at certain times. So, it was, I think, harder on the parents than the kids, frankly.
Next up, Kai. What'd you make?
Made for you today is Kai's campfire dinner, which is grilled pork tenderloin with sauteed red long beans and a red wine and pineapple sauce.
Kai, was there any moment during the competition when you went, uh-oh?
I think there was. When I vacuum sealed the pork, a lot of that water and liquid came into the pork. So cooking time, it could be a little off because the texture becomes different when you're feeling it, see how well it's cooked. So I was a little nervous about that. It ended up being 3 minutes overcooked, but I think overall it went well.
As we were going on to the set, I said to Kai, whatever you do, at the end, do not make ice cream. You've never made ice cream. You've never used a machine. It's where challenge chefs go to die. So it comes to the final round, and the final ingredients come out there, and one of them is coconut milk. And what's the first thing that Kai does? He runs to the ice cream machine.
Once again, you gotta get your dishes done in just 30 minutes.
And as Harveen said, he smashed it, and the coconut ice cream with the strawberry nerds rolled in was delicious, and he made that with a chocolate matcha molten cake and a fruit compote with sugar and salt, all in 30 minutes. And so that was the pièce de résistance. So Kai was, young enough to ignore me and old enough not to care. It was great.
So what's going to come next, Kai? Now that you've had this taste of fame and fortune, what did you win?
So my prize for winning was $10,000, along with the Chop Junior Chef Coat, which will be arriving soon.
And what will you be doing with your $10,000, Kai?
So I'm planning on saving some of it for my future restaurant, saving some of it for my college fund, and then I'm going to donate some of it to the New Orleans Food Bank.
My goodness. Well, your heart is certainly in the right place. When do you think you're going to get that restaurant?
Anywhere between 20, 21.
Dad, how do you feel about all this?
Well, you know, we're obviously so proud and so thrilled. And I think the thing that really crossed my mind as I was watching not just Kai but the other children during the show is how if you give young children the opportunity to stretch themselves and give them the chance to be challenged and to succeed, they can do extraordinary things. And maybe in our schools today, with so much focus on testing and filling in the bubble, we're not doing enough of really challenging our children and allowing them to really stretch themselves and show what they can do, because these kids are completely amazing.
Well, it's really exciting to meet you, Kai, and I'm so tickled to finally meet you. I'm such a big fan of your dad. Michael, thank you so much for coming to talk with us, and congratulations on what an amazing boy you have.
Well, Poppy, thank you so much for being such an inspiration and a muse for us here in New Orleans. We're really honored to be here.
Kai Hecht, Chop Junior champion, and his father, Michael.
Wonder Boy, life just begun. Turn your sorrow into wonder. Dream alone, don't sigh, don't run. Life is only what you wonder. Day is as light as your brightest dream. Night is as dark as you feel it ought to be. Time.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Have you missed an episode of Louisiana Eats? Hear today's show or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. If you're not podcasting yet, it's time to subscribe. We've launched a new exclusive podcast series, Louisiana Eats Quick Bites. The podcasts include sneak previews of material that has not been broadcast yet, as well as exclusive full-length interviews as you've never heard on the show before. Well-seasoned, with lots of food history and recipes, too. Visit our podcast page at poppytooker.com so you won't miss a single serving of our broadcast or our new podcast. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, Camellia Beans, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau and from the Palace Cafe, home of the Weekend Jazz Brunch featuring a build-your-own Bloody Mary bar, located in the historic Whirline Music Building on Canal Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. And to our business manager and social media maven, Maddie Mulladew. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Don't forget to find our recipes and see what we're up to at poppytooker.com. You can check us out on Instagram and Facebook, too. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.